I am Jimbo Paris, and you are listening to the Jimbo Paris Show. Hello, everyone. I am Jimbo Paris, and welcome to the Jimbo Paris Show. And today we have Christy Sumner, and she is very passionate about the paranormal. And she actually founded the Soul Sisters Paranormal, and they're kind of a female team. And it's two sisters and two friends, and they're kind of focused investigating and traveling and reporting a lot of really unique historical events. So let's see what she has to say. Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Jimbo. How are you?
Good, good. So can you begin by giving me sort of a brief summary about yourself, who you are, what you're about, and what your message is?
Absolutely. So my name is Dr. Christy Sumner, and I'm the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal. And as you stated, we're an all-female team that was started in 2014 by myself, my twin sister, our younger sister, and two female family friends. And we really just started as a girls' trip. We would routinely get together and do things, you know, in different cities that were unique. And in 2014, we had the opportunity to go to the West Virginia State Penitentiary, which is located in Moundsville, West Virginia. And we have a family friend that sat on the board of that facility. And while we were there, he said, why don't you come and stay the night in the prison? And so we did. And we left that experience with what we felt was compelling paranormal activity, such as door slamming, footprints, footsteps running through the hallways and such. And so after that experience, we decided that we really wanted to form Soul Sisters Paranormal in an attempt to add a research component to paranormal investigations, as well as highlight the historical narratives of the places that we investigate.
And what types of places do you investigate usually?
Well, we have two types of investigations that we do. The first one is what I call commercial investigations. And so these are places like the St. Augustine Lighthouse, Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, the West Virginia State Penitentiary, those larger locations that kind of tout themselves as being haunted. So we go to those locations. And then a second type of investigation that we do is what I call residential. And so these are investigations where a homeowner or a business owner will call us and say, hey, I think that there's something going on in my house or my business. Will you please come and investigate? And so we do that, and we try to put their mind at ease with regards to what's going on in their home or business.
You formed up a team, but what really motivated you internally to sort of do this and get into this?
And that's a great question. We've always had a fascination with the paranormal. So we said to ourselves, if we ever had the opportunity to conduct a paranormal investigation, that we would do that. And again, we had that opportunity when we went to Moundsville. But I think what really propels us to continue to do this is, again, that research base with regard to the historical narrative of these locations. You know, we get to tell the story of places that a lot of people don't get to go to. So again, like the Lizzie Borden house or the Villisca Axe murder house, we get to go and have a very tactile experience with those locations. And we get to tell the story to our audience. So the historical component really is what drives what we do. The secondary aspect is finding that paranormal evidence, that unexplained evidence, if you will, that will allow us to get closer to an answer of what happens next, what happens after we die. Do our souls continue? Do our spirits continue? And so I think that's really what is now the catalyst behind what we do.
What are some of your craziest stories?
We've got a bunch of them. I mean, you know, like I say, we've been all over the country. So I'll say the first one, the one that really pops into my mind when somebody asks me that is we're investigating the old Gilchrist County Jail, which is in Trenton, Florida. And I've investigated this location twice. The first one was with Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations. She's another female paranormal investigator, and we collaborated on this investigation. So this is a jail in Gilchrist County. It's about an hour's west of Gainesville, Florida. So when we went there, it's a very small jail. It's got about four cells in the bottom, four cells on the top. And she and I were the only people on the property. And we were experiencing some things that we could absolutely not explain. We were capturing shadow figures. We were hearing voices in the moment. We were capturing things on our voice recorders that we left stationary. Pretty much every piece of equipment that we had that night was validating every other piece of equipment. So I'd say that was one of the most active investigations that we've gone on. Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary in Petros, Tennessee is another great location. We are capturing shadow figures, and when we're the only people on the property, I'm hearing voices, hearing footsteps. A lot of the locations that we've gone to have proved very active with regards to unexplained activity.
When you see all these things, is this just normal for you now? How do you take all this immensely?
You know, it really is. You know, a lot of people ask if we get scared, and we do have that moment of trepidation when we go into these locations. We get startled every now and then, but to us, it really is about that exploration, right? Going into these locations and having that experience to, again, see if we could add to the knowledge base of what happens next. And for us, it really is something that's an adrenaline rush, and we love doing it now. And, you know, every investigation is unique. You know, the St. Augustine Lighthouse has a different story than the Villisca Axe Murder House, which has a different story than the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, but they're all unique in and of themselves. And I like I said, I think that really is what propels us to keep doing this. And it's one of those things that we just absolutely love doing.
And how did your whole team collaborate? Do they all just think the same way you do?
For the most part, I mean, we're a group of females, so we all are very opinionated. So just by our very nature, you know, we have our opinions on things. But I think the unique aspect of Soul Sisters Paranormal is the fact that three of us are actually sisters. So there's my twin sister and then our younger sister. The three of us are extremely close. They're my best friends. So getting to travel with them and have these experiences with them is an amazing bonus in my life. And then we add a couple of friends, Kim and Cara. They come with us on select investigations. And we all just really fit. You know, we've known each other for years, the Cara and Kim. And it really is something that we enjoy doing. When we go to a location, everybody just kind of falls into their quote unquote roles, if you will. You know, we have equipment set up. We have research before we go to a location. We research a lot after we do an investigation. And everybody just seems to really work as a cohesive team when we go to these locations.
Excellent. And do you have any specialists? How does the team dynamic work with you guys? You have the camera person and then maybe the psychic that maybe reads the environment. How does that work?
Well, I wouldn't say any of us are psychic. I think by the very nature of being females, I think we're empathic to the point of just being able to have empathy with these spirits. I'm not going to say that, you know, we can read each other's minds or anything like that. But I think just as a woman, we're more empathic, if you will. When we go to these locations, and I'm so sorry about that. I'm in my office right now. So when we go to these locations, you know, we have that ability, but we also really kind of fall into our respective roles. You know, we each have a camera, we each are filming, we are each asking questions and doing the research with those.
How do you sort of work with clients in a sense? How do your services work?
So the first thing that we do is when we get a phone call or an email from a person, the first thing that they usually tell us is, you know, please don't think I'm crazy. And so we go into with the mindset of they are actually experiencing something. Something is going on in their home or their business. And we absolutely believe them that they are experiencing something. So the first thing that we do is we go in and we research that location. We research the history of the location. And we talk to the homeowner about their family history and just kind of what the dynamics is there. And then what we do is we'll go into the investigation. We'll put our voice recorders down, you know, put our night vision video cameras out, and just actually do an extensive investigation of the home or the business. And the first thing that we try to look for is anything that's environmental that they could be perceiving as paranormal. So for example, we got called into a business and he was convinced that his business was haunted. He had some night vision video cameras up and they would routinely go off during the night, as in turn off, turn on, turn off, turn on. So he was convinced that he had some spirit activity in his location. His business is a brick and mortar location. The storefront is all glass. He's got some mirrors running down the side, some display cases inside of that. So when we investigated the location, we were not really feeling anything. None of our equipment was really picking up anything, but we left our night vision video cameras there after the investigation and we left. So when I called him the next morning, he said, yeah, it was a very active night. My cameras, you know, did their thing. And so I wanted to cross-reference his cameras with our cameras. And when I looked at the timestamps, what we were finding was the way his storefront was positioned, he was running perpendicular to a road that had a high volume of U-turn traffic. So every time a car would make a U-turn, their headlights would bounce into his storefront, hit the mirror, bounce up into the night vision video camera and essentially blind it to the point where it would turn off night vision and then turn back on. So if you weren't looking for that, you would perceive it as your camera just going off and on. So when we told him that, he changed the angles of the camera and his quote unquote haunting stopped. So the first thing that we always do is we'll look for environmental factors like that, that we can explain to the homeowner that this is what's going on, not so much paranormal. But we have had instances where there are things that we cannot explain, voices, footsteps, and such. And then we'll work with the homeowner after they decide what they want to do with that information.
That's a very specific issue, though. Are you an expert in certain fields? Have you studied beforehand on a lot of this stuff? Because you seem, how should I put it, very familiar with, was there some type of degree you studied, or did you have a mentor?
Well, not so much for the paranormal. I have a master's degree in criminal justice with a PhD in public affairs with an emphasis on criminal justice. So the research aspect has really come from the academic world that I've lived, you know, was in for years. So we use that research background to really drive these investigations. As I said before, we'll go to a location and we'll take, you know, several hours before we even start the investigation, and we'll look for things that, again, are environmental: light pollution, noise pollution, airplane traffic, train traffic, anything that could influence somebody to think that there's something going on in their home when it's really something that's environmental. And so we use, like I said, we use that research background to really drive that investigation. And I think it's a little bit unique than a lot of paranormal investigators in the field, but it's something that we feel is important because we don't want to put out anything that we say is quote unquote unexplainable when in fact it could be, you know?
Very interesting. So you are in law, but what is the specific skill sets of all of your other, your whole team of soul sisters? Let's kind of start with the first two sisters.
So my twin sister and I, we both have PhDs, again, in public affairs with an emphasis on criminal justice. Kim has a master's degree in education. And then Cara and Michelle are both JDs. They're both lawyers. So one is a lawyer in Colorado and one is a lawyer in Washington, D.C. So again, we come at this with a very detailed research background. And I think we've put that to good use with these investigations that we go on.
Well, that's very impressive. Two PhDs and one master.
And two lawyers, yes. So wow. It's a very, you know, it's a very unique team in the paranormal world. I'm not going to say that, you know, we're better than anybody else in the paranormal world. It's just we come at it with a different mindset than a lot of different teams out there.
Are you sure? I think that would actually make you a bit better than most other.
No, you know, like I said, every team that we've encountered, they have their own skill set, they have their own techniques, and that's what works for them. You know, for us, we just happen to be a group of female investigators that, you know, have an education background, and we use that to guide our investigations. Again, the things that we're getting, the interesting thing about the paranormal is we're dealing with a field that really has no explanation, right? It's outside the laws of normal science. So for example, if I hold an apple and I drop it, I know that apple is going to fall every time. With paranormal investigations, you know, I can investigate a jail three nights, and two nights I might not get anything. On the third night, I may get something that's unexplainable. So it's not something that's a set science. There's really no concrete answers. Again, the things that we're finding, we hope, are adding to the knowledge base of really what happens next after we pass.
Speaking of jails, can we get into the story of the lunatic asylum?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum is in Weston, West Virginia, and this was built in 1864, and it really followed what was called the Kirkbride Plan. So Dr. Kirkbride, he had this grand plan of building a very unique facility where individuals who have tuberculosis or have mental deficiencies, they could go into this facility and have really one-on-one care, patient to doctor one-on-one care, a lot of sunlight, a lot of outdoor activities, and really just provide the patient with something that was different than, you know, than the normal time back in 1864. And so it's this huge facility. It was built to hold 250 patients, again, to really keep that patient to doctor ratio extremely low. It closed in 1994, but the progression of care from 1864 to 1994 was such that it really digressed. So you have, again, you start with one-on-one care, and then it progresses into overcrowding with patients. They started performing lobotomies, shock therapy treatment, cold water bath treatments. So by the time it closed, you have a facility that was built to house 250 patients, yet when it closed, it had over 2,500 patients. So when we investigated there, it's one of these facilities, again, it's very grand, but you can really feel that the walls have been permeated with the emotion of those patients, the patients that were in there, to the point where even if you're not looking for something paranormal, it just feels like there's a heaviness in the hallways of this facility. And so when we investigated there, there were five of us on that investigation, and there were two docents that had to stay on property with us. So seven people total on the entire property. And we were capturing things, screams that we couldn't account for. Objects were moving. We have no explanation on how they moved. We tried several different experiments to communicate with the spirits of some children that are said to be there, and had some very positive responses from that. And so the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum is an amazing location to investigate.
Now, when I think about paranormal investigators, I always remembered, you know, those guys on History Channel with, you know, night vision, you know, view and all that other stuff. How do you tell what's the real deal versus what's fake? Because, you know, you're obviously the experts here. You got two PhDs, master degrees, people.
Well, when you go into a location, like I said, the first thing that we do is we look for things that we can control, right? Again, the light pollution, the noise pollution. And when we control for those things, what we're left with is what we call the unexplainable. And so, for example, when I'm in a location and I know that there's only five females on the entire property, yet I capture a male's voice or I capture a child's voice on a voice recorder, that to me is unexplainable. And that's what we put out there on our videos. Now, if somebody wants to come back and say, oh, well, I think it was this, this, and this, that's fine. I want to have that dialogue with that person to show them, listen, this is how we set everything up. There were no men here. There were no children here, but yet these things are happening. That's really what we put out on our videos. Again, those things that we call unexplainable. There's never been a location that we've gone to where I would consider something as quote unquote being faked, i.e. the property owner has something in there that would trigger something fake occurring. The reason I say that is because when we go to these locations, a majority of the time, they just give us the key and we go in, we lock the door, and we're the only people there. The owner or the docents have no idea where we're going to set up our equipment. They have no idea what questions we're going to ask. There's no way that they could prepare for the experiments that we're going to do because they really have no knowledge. Yeah, they have no knowledge beforehand. So the things, like I said, the things that we're left with are things that, you know, like I said, we've controlled for everything that we can, and yet they're explainable to us in the moment, unexplainable to us in the moment.
So where does your criminal justice come in when dealing with the paranormal? I'm interested to know.
And that's a great question. I think the background that we have in criminal justice really allows us to go in and do a more extensive research than a lot of different teams. You know, we spend a lot of time in archives, in libraries, in state historical societies, in city historical societies, museums, and we really go and try to get the in-depth information that we can at these locations. We do that before we go on an investigation, and that allows us to formulate questions. It allows us to get a feel for the location before we even go and investigate. And then afterwards, after the investigation, we'll continue on with that research because we really want to put together a very detailed historical narrative of each location. When we're in the investigation and setting up our equipment, I think it kind of lends to us getting some different angles, different shots, thinking about things a little bit differently than somebody else may or another team may. Some of the equipment that we use, as I said before, are night vision video cameras, voice recorders, and that sort of thing. We also take in each location that we go to, we take in what we call trigger items. And these are items that are designed to elicit a response from any spirit that may be present. So for example, when we go into a jail or a prison, we'll take water and we'll take cigarettes because that's what a lot of prisoners would want or inmates would want. When we went to Fort Mifflin, we investigated a section there that was a solitary confinement cell during the Revolutionary War. So we took in water and food because we felt that, you know, if you're in solitary confinement, that would be something that you would want. And so, and that's all driven by the pre-investigation or the pre-research that we do. And I think to some extent that allows us to get a better understanding of the spirits and the environment that they lived in. And that allows us to communicate a little bit better with them.
I also noticed another thing too. What are the intentions of a lot of these spirits that are in these locations? Because I know for a fact there's good spirits out there and there's bad spirits. But why are there so many more bad spirits in these haunted areas?
And they're not. And that's another interesting question. And we get that a lot. I think that popular television shows have really driven the narrative that if you have a haunted location, then you're dealing with something evil. You're dealing with something demonic. And that's not the case. You know, I've been to almost 36 of the most reportedly haunted locations in the country, and I have never witnessed anything demonic. I've never witnessed anything that is malicious or out to get us or evil. So we've never experienced anything like that. Now, if we go into a prison or someplace like that, I will say that there are spirits that are quote unquote darker. And that's because, you know, when you're in a jail or in a prison, that the very nature of those people were not so great people. So if you're not a great person in life, you're not going to be a great person in death. And so I think the intentions are that they really just want their story told. They're there for a reason. They want to be recognized. You know, the very essence of human existence, I am so sorry, this never happens. The very essence of human existence is to be recognized. And I think that's the reason why a lot of spirits want to communicate with us, because they do want their story told.
Okay. What about the St. Augustine Lighthouse? Mm-hmm. I think that's another big one.
Yeah.
The St. Augustine. Yeah. So what did you actually bring there?
So the St. Augustine Lighthouse is a fascinating location. First of all, St. Augustine itself is just an amazing city. So it was built in 1564, and you know, it just has a rich history of English and Spanish culture and really a mix of how the city came to be. The St. Augustine Lighthouse was built in 1879, and there's a lot of reports of people who died in accidents on the property of the lighthouse, in the light tower, as well as around the grounds. And so when we went, it's a different type of investigation because you have to go up, right? Not out as you would in a building. So we took night vision video cameras. We had voice recorders there, different pieces of equipment that are designed to measure energy. It's an interesting location because you have a mix, like I said, a mix of culture. So we were using Spanish words to try to elicit a response, and we got Spanish words in response. There was one instance where we were sitting up in the light tower. And if you've never been, the way it works is, so you go up a half spire, a half a spiral, and then there's a landing. And then you go up and there's another landing and there's 7 of these landings. So we were sitting about midway up in the light tower, and I thought I had heard something. And so I just hummed a few bars. I went, hmm, 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 hmm. And from below, a man's voice yelled, "Saw you." And there's nobody there, right? The only people that were on the property were sitting on this landing. So that was an interesting, unexplainable event to us. We captured children's voices on the very top level of the lighthouse. There were no children there. So that was unexplainable. We were capturing personal experiences. And by that, I mean, we were smelling things. For example, we were in the keeper's cottage. And one of the reports are that there was a lighthouse keeper who liked to smoke a pipe every night. And we were sitting down in the basement of this building, and we'd been down there for about an hour just asking questions. And then all of a sudden, this large whiff of just a pipe smoke, you could smell it. We all smelled it. And so that was very interesting. It just came out of nowhere. So those are the kind of things we were finding at the St. Augustine Lighthouse.
These are a lot of star stories, but what was your first investigation like? How did you get into that? Because it's one thing going into the momentum, you have the value now, the repertoire now, but how did you first get into it in the beginning?
Well, like I said, the very first one was at the West Virginia State Penitentiary. That facility, like I said, is just an amazing facility. It kind of, when you're looking at it, it almost looks like a Gothic castle. It was built in 1879. It was in operation until 1995. And we had a family friend that sat on the board of that facility. And so he knew we were spending the night in Moundsville, and we were staying the weekend, actually. So he said, "Why don't you just take one of the nights and stay in the penitentiary while you're here and see if you can connect with our resident spirits. So it was a very rudimentary investigation. We had a couple of voice recorders. We had just a couple of, you know, small digital cameras, nothing major. It was just one of those things that was really just kind of planned on the spur of the moment. And it was just going to be one of those things that, oh, this is going to be a cool thing to do. So we went into the facility and we're sitting there asking questions, and all of a sudden we heard a door slam, like a cell door, a big heavy steel cell door, and there's nobody in the area. So that really kind of piqued our interest. And then we went up, if you look at a picture of Moundsville, the front building there is actually two stories. And the second story is the infirmary. So we're sitting in the infirmary, complete darkness. We're sitting up in the infirmary in about the middle of the hallway. And the infirmary is accessed by two steel and concrete stairwells on either side. So we're sitting in the middle and we're just saying things like, it's time to take your medicine. Come on up here and see the doctor. And boom, 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 footsteps come running up the stairs. So loud that you're expecting something to materialize out of the darkness, but nothing ever does. And there's nobody there because we had a video camera filming the stairs. So you can hear the footsteps coming up the stairs, but you don't see anybody. There's nobody there. And so that was really, like I said, our first experience. And it really just whet our appetite to continue this research and to see if we could find out explanations for these things. And so we formalized Soul Sisters Paranormal, and we had our logo made and our theme music created, and been a really cool ride ever since.
Very good. And what about the aftermath now? What happens once you figure out this place is haunted? Because I wouldn't want to go back to that place if, you know, there's all that stuff going on.
Oh, you know, for us, it is absolutely fascinating. There's locations that we've gone to multiple times: Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, the old Gilchrist County Jail. In fact, I'm actually sitting right now in a jail in Huntsville, Tennessee, that my business partner and I opened about 6 weeks ago, and it is a haunted location. We have a museum set up here for day tours, but we allow people to come in and do paranormal research here, and it's one of those things that is just fascinating to us. I mean, we'll be sitting here during the day and we'll hear footsteps upstairs. We've stayed here, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and we capture males' voices when we know that nobody's here. And so the Soul Sisters Paranormal has really led us, or led me, into this path of having this location. I run it with my business partner, Miranda, from Ghost Biker Explorations. And it is really something that has culminated because of Soul Sisters Paranormal and the research that we've done into this really cool business partnership.
When you began to build a repertoire with research and all this other stuff, what are the other things you do outside of paranormal investigation to kind of enhance your business?
Well, right now, the business that we currently have, you know, we do a lot of marketing. We do a lot of advertising with that. But we also do our like I said, our in-house paranormal research. If you go to our Facebook page or our YouTube channels, you'll see some of the things that we've captured here. And it is one of those things, like I said, that really tries to enhance the knowledge base of the paranormal community as a whole. I think that a lot of people have a misconception about the paranormal, and I do think it's driven by popular media. And so what we're trying to do is really elevate the paranormal community in a professional manner, if you will. So we can show people and highlight, listen, this isn't demonic. This isn't evil. Those things do exist. But for the majority of what we're finding, it's those spirits that want to tell their story and they want to communicate with us. And so I think by having this jail and having it open to paranormal investigators or somebody who's interested in the paranormal or interested in history just to come and research, I think that's really what is driving us in this specific business. With regard to Soul Sisters Paranormal, as I said before, it's one of those things that we're driven by the history of the location, as well as finding things that are to us unexplainable.
You could say what your YouTube and Facebook is.
The YouTube channel is under Soul Sisters Paranormal. The website is www.soulsistersparanormal.com. And then we're also very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal.
So why do you value professionalism so much? And how do you actually make the paranormal community more professional? What History Channel is doing may or may not be doing the optimal thing. What do you think?
Oh, and that's a great question. You know, the goal of TV, the goal of media, is to build an audience base. And you have to build an audience base in this day and age by being sensational. You have to have that gimmick, if you will, to go in and really say, oh, this is demonic. Oh, something scratched me. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, this is evil. Because otherwise you lose the audience. You lose the audience base. Because right now, a lot of people in our society, they want that instant gratification, and they want that factor, right? That kind of like that fear factor, if you will, that jump scare, if you will. For us, we feel that adding professionalism, and that's not to say that they're not professional, it's just not our style, right? So our style is to really highlight the history of these locations, because without the history, there is no paranormal. So we're in a day and age where the history is kind of being forgotten and swept under the rug, but all of these locations that we go to have their place in history. They have a historical significance, right? The St. Augustine Lighthouse has a historical significance. The Grand Old Lady Hotel in North Carolina has a historical significance. And if we lose that, then we've lost part of who we are. And so that's why we're really trying to bring that into the forefront. And I think professionalism is important in what we do, because it gives us that sense of legitimacy. It gives us that sense of, okay, they know what they're talking about, and they present themselves as knowing what they're talking about. Like I said, other paranormal teams, they can absolutely do and have their own style and their own technique. For us, we feel that above everything else, our professionalism is our reputation. And that's why we want to bring that to the forefront.
Another question I have is, what's your game plan on bringing this to the forefront? Because how do you kind of appeal to the way society is, like you mentioned?
Well, I think we're doing that, again, by highlighting that historical narrative, you know, putting out videos that we feel are quality videos that really tell the story, right? If you watch any of our videos, the first 4 or 5 minutes, it's all history, right? It's all about why this place is important. And I think that's how we're really trying to do that. And anything that we do with regard to Soul Sisters Paranormal, we're trying to bring that to the forefront, right? From our logo to our theme music to how we market ourselves. And again, I think that's really important, because it really kind of tries to elevate this subculture, right? Paranormal is a subculture, into more of a mainstream, where people say, okay, there's legitimacy here, right? They're telling me that they're going into this location. They show me how they're controlling for everything. They give me the historical perspective of it. And that adds a sense of legitimacy to what they're finding, that unexplainable stuff. Now, I'll be completely honest with you. If somebody wants to say, I don't believe in that, that is absolutely fine. I am not trying to convince anybody that what I'm saying is right, like trying to convince you that my religion is correct. I can't do that. But what we're trying to do is put together a very cool historical narrative coupled with unexplained things that we're experiencing in the moment. And if somebody wants to believe it, that's great. If they don't, that's great as well. But for us, it just having that, again, that sense of that professionalism adds to what we consider is legitimacy.
Why do you think paranormal is considered a subculture?
I think because it's unexplainable, right? Like I said before, you've got an apple, it's going to fall. That's a science. It's going to happen every time. I think for the paranormal, because there's no real measurement of what we're doing, right? I can tell you that I caught this male voice talking. Another paranormal investigator will say, well, I've got this child talking. There's no threshold of which one is better, right? So it's all just kind of based on what we're finding outside of normal science. But the interesting thing is when you tell somebody you're a paranormal investigator, 9 times out of 10, they want to tell you their ghost story, right? So a lot of people have the belief in ghosts, the belief in the afterlife, but just really going out there and looking for it is something only a select few of us are doing inside the paranormal community. So I think it's one of those things that, you know, if we can elevate and show that this is not something that every time you're looking for it, you're going to get something demonic, that it is something that is pretty interesting when you start delving into it, I think we will be able to elevate that, as I said, into something that is seen as, you know, it'll still probably be seen as a pseudoscience, but more on the threshold of quote unquote legitimate science.
That's very good. And where do you think paranormal kind of lies within the more spiritual community? Do you ever work closely with psychics or mediums by any chance?
not so much work with them. And that's really because we haven't really had the opportunity to, and that's based mostly on logistics of how we travel and when we go. But I do know psychics. I do know mediums. There are several that I think have a legitimate gift that they are able to really utilize that to help people. I do think that just like every field, I do think that there are quacks out there, but for those that I know and that I've talked to and that they've explained things to me and how they work and what they see and what they do, I do think that there are legitimate people out there that have that gift. To your question, we have not specifically worked one-on-one with them, but there are several that I have in you know, in my contact list that I can talk to about certain cases.
Do you have any separate teams that you bring in situationally? What types of teams are there? You know, what are the certain protocols that you have? Do you ever have any situations where things go out of balance and you may have to do something outside of the box? How does that work?
Well, no two investigations are alike, right? So every investigation that we do is unique to that location and to the circumstances behind that location. There are several teams that we will collaborate with. Ghost Biker, I think she's on here watching right now. So Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations, we'll collaborate with her. There are other teams inside the paranormal community that we trust, their technique and their style, and we will collaborate with them on certain things. If there's a location where we feel that there is something that's a little darker, or the homeowner has decided that, you know, I concede that I'm living in a haunted house, but I don't want to live in a haunted house, i.e. I'd like the spirit removed. We will call somebody in to do that, like a priest or a shaman or a demonologist or something like that. So what we do is we actually do the investigations. So if there is something that's a little bit different in that regard, you know, we do have people that we call and collaborate with. And so that's really kind of how we handle any investigation that is kind of a little bit outside of the quote unquote norm of what we do.
Another thing that fascinates me about you is, well, I'm learning a lot too about these haunted houses, but who would want to live in a haunted house? Like, I'm just interested to know, because whenever you hear haunted house, you think, oh my God, get out of there, mm-hmm. You know, not stay in there, you know, but why is that though? And I find that quite interesting.
You know, like I said, I think that reaction by you and a lot of people is driven by popular media, right? If I say haunted house, the first thing that you're thinking of is probably like The Conjuring, right? Where things are being thrown against the wall and there's scratches and everything happening day in and day out. That's not how it is typically, right? Like I said, I'm in this location right now that I feel is haunted. I've been here for 6 weeks and, you know, we work here day in and day out. And to me, it's absolutely fascinating when we capture these voices or hear these spirits or see these spirits. And I think kind of the same is with the homeowners that we're finding or the business owners that we're finding that have something legitimately happening that's unexplainable. Most people, when we go into a location and we say, okay, this is what we found, can't explain this, but this is what we feel is happening. Most of them are like, that's awesome. I live in a haunted house. That's so cool. I just wanted somebody to validate my experiences, what I'm experiencing. So most people that experience a quote unquote haunting are just experiencing, you know, either what we call a residual, where it's just going about its daily routine, if you will, the spirit is, and it causes no harm or any threat to the residents. And so they're fine with that. It adds just kind of a cool story to the place that they're living in.
All my brain thinks is, if you're living in a haunted house, there must be some type of benefit or trade-off. there has to be some good reason why they're staying in there.
Well, like I said, the majority of people where we've investigated their house, they just want that reassurance that they're not crazy. And almost every single one is like, okay, that's pretty interesting. I live in a haunted house and I have always known it. It's just, I wanted somebody to kind of validate it. But, you know, like I said, it's one of those things that a majority of the time, it's not something that's happening 24/7. It's, you know, maybe once or twice a week, you'll hear a door slam or you'll hear footsteps a couple nights a week or something like that. It's not this overall constant something spiritual is in your face 24/7 type of a situation. And I think most people are willing to live with that. If there's nobody being harmed, there's nothing malicious going on. It makes for a very interesting and cool story.
Speaking of malicious, you've never had any negative experiences, maybe besides the prison, anything ever super, super malicious? And why do spirits do this? All this door slamming?
It really is. It's to get attention, you know. you know, for example, it's when, because we're sitting in these locations from anywhere from 8, 10, 12, 15 hours, and we're asking them to either give us a sign that they're here or to, you know, say a word or something, or just to communicate with us. You know, for example, the jail that I'm in right now, we had a paranormal investigation team here last week. And so they were upstairs on the second floor, and this is a museum during the day. So we have a lot of pictures on the walls of the former cells that are in this jail. So they were upstairs on the second floor and they were saying, if you're here, let us know, give us a sign, show us that you're here. And they just happened to have their camera going in the little hallway upstairs, and a picture frame goes flying off the wall. It wasn't aimed at anybody. It wasn't, in my mind, malicious. This picture just kind of goes flying off the wall. And I think it was in response to them saying, show us that you're here, show us you can do this. And it did. And so that's the reason why it's not, like I said, it's not something in my mind that is evil or malicious in any way. And to your question, you know, no, we haven't experienced anything that has harmed us physically or mentally, or has followed us home. We go into each investigation with what I call the quote unquote right intentions. And for me personally, what that means is we go in with a sense of respect for the location, a sense of respect for the spirits that we're trying to communicate with. And we set that intention. We will go in and we will say, you are not allowed to harm us. You're not allowed to touch us unless we give you permission. You're not allowed to follow us home. And I think because of that, because we're recognizing them for the humans that they used to be, we're getting that respect in two ways. One, they're communicating with us, and two, they're not harming us. Like I said, in some places you'll experience things that are a little bit dark, but I would not call them what we've experienced anyway, evil or demonic in any way.
Is that just luck, or is that just how it is? Most spirits are not that bad.
I it's not luck. I think that most spirits just aren't that bad. Yeah. You know, I know numerous groups in this paranormal community, numerous groups of investigators. You know, most of us will say the exact same thing. We don't go in looking for darkness. We don't go in looking for anything demonic. And the things that we experience are legitimately there to tell their story. They want their story heard for one reason or another. They're here because they want us to tell their story correctly, or they want us to tell the story of the location correctly. And I think, like I said, a majority of us, almost every time we go on an investigation, have that exact same experience. It's nothing to be afraid of, nothing to be, you know, threatened by. It's just they're just here to talk to us.
And you say these spirits want to be noticed. So mm-hmm. What happens when you actually give them that satisfaction? Do they stop, or do they... So maybe you're like, you know, I'm not going to slam a door every 3 weeks. I only do it once a month. Like,
you know, it really just depends. You know, so I'll give you an example. We're at the Lizzie Borden House. And if you're not familiar with this, this is a house in Fall Rivers, Massachusetts, where in 1892, a woman by the name of Lizzie Borden was said to have bludgeoned her father and her stepmother to death with a hatchet. The dad was killed in the downstairs parlor. The stepmother was killed in the upstairs bedroom. Lizzie Borden was acquitted of the crime. She lived in Fall Rivers until 1927, but this house is supposed to be extremely active with regard to paranormal activity. And so when we investigated there, the very first thing that we do when we go into a location is we turn on our voice recorders. So they're always running. No matter, we all have one. We leave stationary voice recorders in different parts of the property or in the building. So we always have voice recorders on. And so we were just setting up some of our equipment. We haven't even started really the investigation. So Jenny and Michelle were standing in the parlor, and we have it on video and we have it on audio recorder. So they're standing in the parlor just talking, right? Just like you and I are talking. If you listen to the voice recorder, in the background behind them, we captured a man's voice saying, I'm standing right here next to you. Just like that. He's like, I'm standing right here next to you. So in an attempt to say, hey, I'm right here. They did not hear him in the moment. They didn't see anything in the moment. They didn't feel anything in the moment, but yet we're capturing this man's voice. And so it's like, he's interacting. He's trying to interact with us, but obviously they didn't see or hear him in the moment. So fast forward about 45 minutes later in this conversation, Kara comes down And she and Jenny start talking. And so they were talking about the differences between the Villisca Axe Murder House, which we had investigated prior, and the Lizzie Borden House. Both had to deal with murders that were involved with axes. And so Kara said that would be a horrible way to go. And again, a man's voice is captured on the voice recorder saying it was. And so, again, he's interjecting himself into the conversation. He wants to be a part of the conversation. They never heard him in the moment, but yet it's on the voice recorder. And so, you know, to your question, it's one of those things where, again, they kind of want to be recognized. And I think they're always going to be there. I think unless whatever is holding them here is either fulfilled or they find a way to get to the next realm, they're going to stay here and they'll communicate with us if we ask them.
So considering these ghosts here, what is your sort of spiritual or, well, I know all psychics tend to be very neutral with this, but what is your faith alignment? Where do you think, you know, the ghosts are here as a sort of a purgatory, if you will?
I think that's one of the reasons,
purgatory, you know, being a ghost just wandering around.
Actually, you know, I'm a Christian. I do have a belief in God. I've always had that. Yeah. And so, but in doing this, it has actually strengthened my belief in the afterlife. I do believe that a majority of people, when we pass, will ascend to what's next. I'll call it heaven because I'm a Christian. We will ascend to heaven. However, I think there's about three reasons why spirits can stay behind or stay closer to the veil, if you will, between this world and heaven. I think the first reason is they have to have, there's something that needs to be fulfilled or unfinished business that has to be fulfilled before they can ascend to whatever's next. So for example, my granddaddy died in 1986, and he and my Nana, they'd been married for however long, a lot of years, I can't remember. You know, they loved each other. It was their first marriage for both of them. He passed in 1986. In 2016, I was extremely close with my Nana. In 2016, I had a very vivid dream that my granddaddy came to me and he said, "I'm waiting on your Nana. You're going to be getting a call soon." I mean, this dream was the most vivid dream I've ever had in my life. About 2 weeks later, Nana was in an accident. She never really recovered from that. She went into hospice for about 4 weeks. So on the day that she passed, and with permission from my family, I said, "I know where she's going to go. She's going to go meet granddaddy in this house," because it was a very specific spot in the dream. It was in their house. It was a very specific room where he was standing in this dream. And I said, "She's going to go meet granddaddy on that spot." And so Jenny and I, we took some equipment. We went there, we asked some questions, and through the series of questions, these two meters that we had that are designed to measure energy, I felt that Nana had met up with granddaddy and they ascended from there, because we went back a week later, did the exact same experiment, and nothing. We didn't get any hits, didn't feel anything, nothing. So I think that was granddaddy's unfinished business, right? He was waiting on Nana. So that's the first one, unfinished business. The second one is, I think that some spirits, and we see this a lot with children's spirits, I think they're stuck. They know that they're dead, but they cannot find a way to ascend to whatever's next, whatever a quote unquote mechanism that is, whether they're waiting for their mother or waiting for a parental figure or something to help them to the next realm, they're stuck. So for an example of this, we are investigating Hales Bar Dam, which is in Guild, Tennessee. This dam was built in 1913. It was in operation until 1962, and it has a series of tunnels that run underneath it. And these school kids would use it to get from one side of the river to the next. In the early 1950s, there was an accident, and a couple of these kids were killed. So when we did our investigation there, Michelle said, "Why are you still here? Why haven't you moved on?" And we captured a child's voice saying, "I can't, I'm stuck." So I think, again, he knows he's dead, but he can't find the way to ascend to whatever's next. And then the third reason is fear of retribution for the life they lived on Earth. I think we see this a lot in jails and prisons, where a prisoner, he's afraid that if he moves on from this realm, he's either going to hell or he's going to face some type of punishment in heaven. And he's more, you know, content to just stay where he's at. So those are the reasons why. And again, I don't think every person that dies becomes a ghost or becomes a spirit. It's just a select few in some of these locations.
That's a really fascinating take on things. And how do you sort of, can you sort of give some of these spirits maybe a push or a guide in the right direction? You talked about removing spirits and cleansing homes.
Yeah, there are people that I feel are qualified to do that. We on Soul Sisters Paranormal do not do that. We have had contact with mediums or psychics that have that ability, but it's just something that we've never on our team have really delved into or have attempted to. We just don't feel that that is our place to do that. So in that instance, if we experience a homeowner or a business owner that would like to help that spirit cross over, then we call somebody else to help us do that.
What do you think is sort of the future of your business? Are you thinking about pushing out more books, more content? And what about the equipment? Are you going to start selling equipment? And we're going to get in a little bit to equipment too later.
So the first question is no, we're probably not going to be selling equipment. We do have a book in the works, so hopefully that will come to fruition here in the next year or so. But really, it's just to get some more videos out there to highlight some of these other locations that we've gone to. That's really our forte, is just really putting that out there. And then the jail here in Huntsville, Tennessee, where Miranda and I are now working and owning. So just getting the word out that this jail is here, that we're using it for paranormal research, and people can come and experience the history of this location as well as the haunts of this location. So that's really what's next in the foreseeable future for me.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self some advice, what type of advice would you give to her?
Really, I would say follow your dreams as soon as they come to you. Right. Because I had always, like I said, I'd always had a fascination with the paranormal, but it wasn't until, you know, about 10, 11 years ago that I've really delved into this. And to me, it's something that I wish I would have started a little bit earlier. Now, that's not to say I'm not saying that I regret the decisions that I've made prior to that, because they really had some cool, allowed me to have some cool experiences. But I would say that if there's something that you're passionate about, follow that passion and see where it leads you. Because I never dreamed that I'd be a paranormal investigator. I never dreamed that Soul Sisters Paranormal would have a following on YouTube or on Facebook. You know, I never dreamed that our videos would be so well received, or that I would open a business, a haunted business, with my best friend. So, you know, just follow your dreams and see where they take you.
And what kind of influenced you to follow your dreams? That's a huge risk.
It is. I really have to give a lot of credit to my family. You know, my family is extremely close knit. We've always been supportive of each other, you know, 100%. You know, when I told my mom and dad, you know, that I'm really thinking about starting Soul Sisters and what we do, you know, they were, my dad, especially my dad, he was a little skeptical. He's like, well, what are you finding? What are you doing here? And so we started showing him our videos, and now he's our biggest fan, right? I mean, not many guys wear a Soul Sisters Paranormal t-shirt, but my dad does. And, you know, so just having that family background or that family influence and having somebody that's in your corner, that's pushing you to say, try it. If you fail, you can always, you know, fall back on this. So I think that's been the biggest influence on my life.
And what advice would you give to other people on how they could have your success?
Again, just really follow your dreams. You know, in this country and what we do, you are your only stopping point. You may hit roadblocks, but you find a way to go around them or over them. So really just keep, if it's something that you're passionate about, keep plugging away at it, because one day a door will open or a window will open that you can get through. So yeah, just like I said, just keep following your dreams and pursuing your passions, and eventually it will pay off.
And what do you sort of teach now? As a college professor as well, do you bring in some paranormal stuff or?
I don't. I've really taken a sabbatical from teaching. My background in teaching, I actually taught criminal justice classes and prosecution and adjudication, as well as aviation security and aviation marketing and management. So I did that for several years. And then I decided to see where this would take me and what we would do with Soul Sisters and kind of moving into this realm. So now what I do is, like I said, I run this museum with my best friend, and on a daily basis, we give historical tours. We give historical or ghost tours. We lead paranormal research. We allow teams to come in and investigate with us. And so, yeah, that's really where now my teaching has kind of shifted focus a little bit, if you will, to really kind of teaching the history of these locations and how we can preserve them.
What gave you your business skills as well? Was it that background you had with marketing and so forth?
Yes, you know, and again, just really kind of taking the leap one step at a time. You always learn as you go with this, right? You know, prior to starting this museum, I really didn't have an idea of business sales tax, but now I'm kind of an expert on sales tax. So it's one of those things you kind of have to really, on some aspects, teach yourself. As long as you have the drive, the answers are out there, and there are people out there that are willing to help you find those answers. And so for us, it was really just asking questions, knocking on doors, getting responses until we came up with this really cool, like I said, plan that we have now, this marketing and advertising and museum plan that we have now, that it in only 6 weeks has turned very successful. And so I rely a little bit on the academic background for the business, but it really is a trial and error type of situation. But the answers are there if you look for them.
Very good answer. And do you have any final words you'd like to bring about here? This has been a great interview.
Well, thank you. And I really appreciate the support. I appreciate you having me on tonight. You know, like I said, just have fun in life. Life is short, but you know, what we're finding is that there is something after this. I'm very convinced of that. And you know, to your point earlier, just follow your dreams, really go out there and push for what you want, because it'll eventually come if you're tenacious enough.
All right. I am Jimbo Paris, and this is the Jimbo Paris Show. Thank you again, Christy.
Thank you, Jimbo.
Thank you for listening to the Jimbo Paris Show.